Ladies and gentlemen, we are now boarding Group A. Please have your boarding passes ready to scan. If your phone is cracked, old, or was chewed up by your Chihuahua travel companion, please refrain from holding up the line. And instead, simply go to Verizon and trade in any phone in any condition from one of their top brands for the new Samsung Galaxy S25 Plus with Galaxy AI on Unlimited Ultimate and a watch or tab, also on them.
Service plan required for watch or tab. Trade-in and additional terms apply. See Verizon.com for details.
Access big savings every day, all in the Kroger app.
Get tender Heritage Farm boneless chicken breast for $2.49 a pound. Then find low prices on thousands of items like sparkling ice water, Kroger brand chips, and more, all with your card.
Shop these deals at your local Kroger, less than 5 miles away. Or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Hi, folks. Welcome to another episode of Film Study. This is Ken McCusick, and we're here to continue our discussion of the wide receivers coming up in the 2024 draft and the countdown we are doing with James Ogden. James, how are you doing?
I'm good. Thanks, Ken. Looking forward to this.
Great to have you back. And if you didn't listen to that first episode, please go download that. Some great stuff. James is a real student of scouting, produces a high volume scouting of scouting reports that are very technical in nature. He's a graduate of the Scouting Academy, kind of like Michael Crawford is, and is a guy who I really respect his projections for players and whatnot. And he's already come up with some surprises in that first one, in the 10 through 6 receivers, or 10 through 7 receivers, I guess. It's great listening, I think, if you really love to talk wide receivers in the NFL draft. So anyway, James, great to have you back.
Great to be back, Ken.
All right. So I think we'll start by talking through a few honorable mention players. And I think the key with an honorable mention is right player, right price. So in these cases, give me kind of some guys you think fit the Ravens reasonably well and that you, where you would think they might be a value selection.
So the first one,
we'll do one each. We'll do one each. And meaning we'll do about four each total, but we'll do alternate.
Yeah, that makes sense. So this guy is really hard to pigeonhole where he's going to be value because he has significant off the field concerns, but I'm a big Anaias Smith fan. And when you plug in his tape, the first thing you think is, wow, why is nobody talking about this guy more? And then you go and look at the sort of the bio and what's going on. And I won't touch on it. There's no point, but people can go and read about it. He has a lot of off field concerns that will likely drop him down the list of many teams, and possibly off the board, and he may be off the board for the Ravens as well for certain. But he's a very talented player and a guy who I think is, you know, he is that guy we talked about in the first episode of the kind of gadget guy who the Ravens could use in a number of different ways, and I think would bring an awful lot more to the Ravens offense than Devin Duvernay did over his time with the Ravens. You know, he's not the, when you watch him at first, you think he's a real speed guy, and he hasn't necessarily tested that well from that perspective, but he's a play speed guy. He plays fast. He's a really promising option, I think, possibly in the slot, who could contribute immediately. I think he probably could also play flanker if you were in a pinch, but his best role is going to be in a multiple role, in that kind of gadget type role. I love the way he separates. I'm not going to go into the same level of detail I would go with other guys. Yep. But I really do like Anaias Smith, but there's all over the board. His talent probably suggests he should be a day two guy, but I think he will be a day three guy because there'll be a number of teams that are really risk averse with drafting him.
So where is your number on Smith, who's also, by the way, on my honorable mention list? So I'm going to write it down here because I just have a round. I don't have a pick, but I probably need to actually put a pick number on this. Okay, yeah, I'll give you my pick number.
The problem is, from a talent perspective, my number is a lot higher, like is way too high. I think I'll put it in the context of the Ravens. I think that the pick where I'd be fine with them picking him, if they can get next to his character and get back, like get do enough investigation, the off-field concerns are not an issue. Mm-hmm. And he's got an ACL in his past as well. So there'll be the medical. Then I would take him at the end of the third based on talent alone, which is high. But I really believe in his ability to be a difference maker in this offense. And you would use him you would have to have a plan for him. You'd have to use him in multiple ways. He would have to be out of the backfield on a number of occasions. You would have to have a really creative plan. He'd have to be a mostly full-time player, just in a multitude of different roles. But I think he has the talent to do that, which is why I'd be happy. But that is only if they get clearance on his character, I think.
And you're better putting in a the condition. Fourth. Yeah. Okay. You're putting a condition on it that I kind of know what the Ravens do, or at least used to do. I don't know if the system is exactly the same, but I've been in the Ravens draft room and they've had all the plaques up after the draft, and there'll be certain players that have a black dot on them. Well, black dot players can occur for one of two reasons. One is if they're injured. And so Anaya Smith might have one of those for a background with the ACL and whatnot. But if not that, then he'll certainly would have a black dot for an off-field concern. And those are usually guys they won't draft unless they drop a lot. And an exception to that, for example, that drafted in 2010 was Arthur Jones, who had a significant injury concern in his background. But they did end up drafting him, and they you know got great value on the play. I think that's one where Anaya Smith, I would see the Ravens drafting him in round five, if at all. But unfortunately, I think there are too many people who think like you, like him too much as a football player, don't have a component for putting a value on the risk that you're taking by getting a guy like that. Because it's not just this incident, it's the judgment and you know what else could occur based on that. Now, some players, you know, a shock to the system will set them straight, so to speak, and some others, it's not that simple. So anyway, we'll see. I would say 160 would be the number I'd draft him at.
I think that's where you're getting into the draft is a game in that perspective. You can't ignore the value perspective and getting him at the right. In terms of pure evaluation of him on film, I think he belongs towards the end of day two. But I think where you're going to feel more comfortable about his value is going to be somewhere in day three. And I think probably towards the end of the fourth or into the fifth, as you've mentioned, I think is going to be more realistic. But my caveat was mine was based entirely on talent on the field, which he is a special player.
Okay. I'll give you the guy I think is my highest ranked on the pure honorable mention guys is Devontaze Walker of North Carolina, who's 6'2", 193, 436, 40, track star jumps. He will be 23 in June, so he's a little bit older. He's missed the start of the 2023 season, but the one thing I really liked is he came back in. It was immediately the focal point of the UNC offense with May. Got good, generally speaking, pretty good metrics. The one troublesome one is he's only got 2.8 yak per reception. I'd like a bigger guy to do better than that. I'd like any receiver to do better than that, frankly. Very disappointing yak, and only two missed tackles forced the entire season. He is one of the very few big receivers who is not a dominant hitch route guy. And that might mean he's giving away something at the top of the route. I'd like to hear your thoughts on that, because I'm probably not sophisticated enough to pick that out in terms of what he's doing. Is he not sitting in the chair correctly? Is he not, you know, doing some of these other things to decelerate? Or is he doing them too early and giving something away that is doing that? He was good on contested catches. Anyway, that's enough said about the guys on my honorable mention list. But what did you think about Devontaze Walker?
So he's on my probably do not draft list. So we have quite a difference on Tez Walker. It's not I agree with what you're saying. You see the vertical. I was so excited to watch him, and I was so disappointed coming away from the film. I think he is a vertical threat. There is no doubt about it. And his gear change really helps him get open deep. My concern is technically, in a lot of the routes that are going to be crucial to his success, he does struggle, and that hitch thing is true on other two-step breaks as well, where he does not drop his weight very well, and he does not efficiently make transitions in those different types of routes. He's a guy who can do some nod and go type routes. He can do those vertical routes, but on anything else where it's calling for a technical break, he really struggles to get open. And so he's quite low on my list. Maybe do not draft was a bit harsh. There'd definitely be a point where you'd consider him because of the upside, the vertical upside. But I'm a little concerned about his projection to the next level. And I'm not sure he's ever going to be what you might try and project him to be, I think. But that's me.
Okay, fair enough. Let's hear another one from you.
So my second guy would be Malik Washington, who I think is a really interesting guy, who is someone who you will be getting at a greater discount, although there has been a little bit more buzz on him recently. He's small, and I'm not necessarily. This is funny because I think he's probably too like Zay Flowers for the Ravens to consider him. So it's maybe it's not a. I'm sure this isn't really a Ravens pick, but he's a really interesting guy, and I don't think he's a slot. I actually think he's an X in the way he plays the game. He's just
an X, not a Z. He's an X. 100%
do. You know, wow. the top of his range in terms of comparison is Steve Smith. Like that, he's not going to be Steve Smith. He's just not, because not many people are. But that is the top of his range. And I think if you pigeonhole him too much as a gadget guy because of the way he gets yards after catch, which is phenomenal, you run the risk of devaluing a lot of the skills he has as a pure receiver. And so. You know, he's got a lot of work to do to get to the point where he would be a valuable X in an offense. But I think that's the archetype of receiver that he is. And so you want to see that's how I see him. And you get him at a significant discount. But as I say, I think he's probably. Obviously Zay's not, he's a little too similar to Zay for a lot of people's liking probably. And I'd be surprised if the Ravens draft him, but I really like him.
We talked on the first show about how relieving Zay of gadget duties, to me anyways, is quite important. Getting him to go down the field. He's the receiver who gives the Ravens more in terms of taking pressure off from safeties or taking the attention of safeties. Malik Washington is the ideal gadget player. And, you know, you talk about pigeonholing him, but that's what the Ravens really need him to do initially. They need him to take over that speed role there, probably return some kicks or maybe do that. 10.0 yards per target this last year on 8.1 ADOT. It's a huge number of screen plays he was involved in, and he did very well in terms of making the most out of them. A lot of bigger wide receivers, they get thrown 10 to 12 or 15 screen passes per year, and they get 5.5 or 6 yards per target on those. And it's an extension of the run game that is not particularly exciting. And it creates some variance, obviously, on those plays because screens can go for a significant loss or a gain. So you don't necessarily want to add that variance to your offense. But Washington is a guy who really makes the most out of those opportunities. And I liked him for that. I had the first two guys I put on my list were Ania Smith and Malik Washington in this group. And my immediate feeling was I got to stop putting slot guys on my honorable mention list because the Ravens need some other big players. But most of the big players are the in-demand players that we're talking about anyway, higher up in the draft. There are a few others, but he's on my list of seven honorable mention guys that I had. And I felt, I guess it's a good thing we got the same guy on that one at least. I'll move on. I'll do another, and maybe we just do three each in this case. So my third one is Javon Baker of Central Florida. Liked him in terms of size. He's not a pure speed guy at 4.54, but has a great yards per target number, 3.21 yards per route run, ADOT of 17.1. The quarterback the rating throwing to him is about 119. Now here's the problem. He's got a 10.3% drop rate. You could say it's a hard thing to reduce, and it is. It's also maybe kind of an opportunity. In his case, it's not something that was just popped up in 2023. It's 11.4% for his career, which is awful. He's got pretty meh Wiggle characteristics that need to improve. But there are some other characteristics I really like. I think he's got tracks the ball well in the air. He's been good on contested catches in college. He's not, you know, the kind of guy who's going to command a safety over the top on deep coverage due to some of his acceleration issues. And I wouldn't say he's Miles Boykin and like the slowest 0-60 you've ever seen, but he's not the fastest either. So anyway, he's a guy I like him in the mid rounds. I don't like him early, but he's one guy who didn't miss my list by too much, which means he was probably about 18th or 19th in terms of wide receivers as I had it.
Yeah, I like Javon Baker too, and he would have been on my honorable mentions list. I'm pretty much where you are, I think, in terms of the value there. But I do like Baker. I think there's definitely a lot to like there.
Okay, end of the third, fourth round. Are you okay with Baker?
Yes. Yeah, I'm okay with Baker at the end of the third. Yeah.
All right. Let's go one more from you, and then we'll move back onto our countdown.
Yeah. So I think I was going to go in a different direction because I do quite like Jalen McMillan out of Washington, but we'll talk about another Washington receiver as well later on. So I wanted to just quickly touch on Tyler Harrell, who is a speedster, a ridiculous speedster, probably a guy who I think if he'd have run at the combine would have run as fast as Worthy, possibly. Like, that's the kind of speed I'm talking about. But he is bigger. So he's 6 foot. I really, really like him. Like I don't necessarily love his fit with the Ravens because it's probably the best version of him is going to be a team that gets him sort of some quick targets and allows him to use that speed that he has. There is a thing where he doesn't, in some parts of his route game, doesn't necessarily play at full speed that you would like and attack routes at full speed. But I really do like his potential. There's a lot to work on there as a project, but he's a speed guy, and I don't tend to love speed guys. But he's a speed guy who I think could turn into something, and you're going to get him at a reasonable discount, I would think. You know, you're not going to have to draft him until day three, probably later on in day three as well. So he'd be an interesting addition, I think, to the receiver room.
Just to be clear here, Tyler Harrell is the wide receiver from Miami, correct? That's the one. Okay. So he's hardly played at the college level. He's got only 52 college targets in 6 years, right?
He does. Yeah, he's had a lot of bouncing around. He was at Alabama. He transferred to Louisville, I think.
Louisville for 4 years, Alabama 1 year, Miami 1 year.
Miami, yeah. Yeah, no, he's bounced around an awful lot. So, yeah, there's stuff to work on there. And I think he is going to get drafted. Or at least I think he's going to get drafted. The athletic gifts alone are going to get him drafted. So there's a lot, it's clay to work with. But I wanted to give a guy who was a bit further down the rankings that I kind of like.
That is a golden nugget for sure. Obviously a player I didn't look at. I don't have anything to say about him, but that's a great one. So won't fall to the UDFA ranks. You think he's not a priority UDFA? He's somebody takes him.
He's going to get drafted. I just don't believe that there's been reported GPS speed on him. That's just ridiculous. There's just no way he gets out of the draft. I don't think he will be. I'm almost certain he will be picked despite the lack of production, just because someone will, there'll be a coach that falls in love and wants to take him. And I don't think it will be a bad decision. It's not a bad decision in the sixth or seventh round to take a guy like that. Who's high upside at that position. If you can work him into something, that would be great.
I almost don't want to ask you about this guy because he could still be on your list, but I really doubt it. So why don't we just talk for a second about Xavier Worthy since we're on this? And where would you find value in a pick of him? Is his weaknesses and strengths are in a lot of ways as well known as just about anybody in the wide receiver group?
Yeah. I struggled with Worthy. So I think he's going to go in the first round, and there's some people I respect who evaluate him far higher than I do. So I do want to go back and do some more tape on him, but he's, He's further down my list. And he was a difficult evaluation. I know I have this kind of bias towards guys who separate with technical ability and processing. And I sometimes underrate the ability to separate with speed. So I think I'm probably too low on him currently, but at the moment, you know, you're going to have to take him in the first. I think he is going to get picked in the first round. I think somebody's going to fall in love, and that's too rich for me based on my evaluation, I would say.
So here's the question. You have an option between Worthy and Legette, or you have an option between Worthy and some of the other receivers we've talked about that we'd be perfectly happy with round two, and you're at pick 63 or wherever the Ravens are. I don't remember exactly what their pick number is. Do you take Worthy at that point and turn your nose up and do other things? Because there's so many questions about him as a receiver.
There really are. I would struggle to go against my board, given that when we talk about that lower end of the top 10, I'm talking about guys I really like and guys I would like a lot more than 8th, 9th, 10th in other draft classes. So it's tough to eschew one of those guys for a guy who I have so many question marks about. But like I said, I do feel like I need to do some more tape on him because I wonder if I'm missing some subtleties about his route running and the way he separates. But I had some challenges with him. He's obviously ludicrously athletic and the speed is world class. And I think it translates well for more linear routes. But, you know, his ability to beat defenders angles and his lateral breaks, I just didn't see it. But I do think his hands are a little bit deficient as well. But it's a tough one for me. I'd like to do some more tape on him.
I've got two more things for the Ravens. I think it'd be, and I had listed about six questions about him because I thought we would have time to go through this, but we really don't. But one is, can he provide any value as a blocker? And I know people always hate it when I bring up a wide receiver and his run blocking, but that's a big part of what the Ravens do. They want wide receivers who keep their feet as run blockers, and Worthy is just a non-entity as a run blocker, and that would be frustrating. And maybe he could get better, but you know, he's 5'11", 165. He's never going to be a guy who's big enough to block even a cornerback easily. And so that's an issue. The other is, you know, tiny catch radius, the drop rate, the release. Can he work through press coverage? Can he be the hand fighter to stack a cornerback at the NFL level, even though he's much faster than him? You know, it's just, there's a lot of hand fighting that goes on as you're just progressing down the field towards being open and even and leaving, whatever you want to call it. But I'm really not that excited about Worthy. And I thought, this is good. If this creates a pick before 30 for the Ravens, I'm all for it. I will be happy as hell when he comes off the board and the Ravens haven't picked him.
Yeah, I agree.
All right. So we're your number six guy, I think, is next. And who is that?
He is. So my number six guy, and I'd be interested to see if this guy's on your list at all. Because I have seen people be all over the board with him, but to be clear now, from number six onwards is where I'm happy with the Ravens taking at 30. I would say this guy, you could probably trade back and get him, but Ricky Pearsall is my number six guy, who I think is an incredibly skilled receiver. He's not necessarily the type of X that we discussed before in terms of that DK Metcalf mold, but he is an X for me. His testing has gone so under the radar. It's ridiculous.
That three cone is unreal.
It's unbelievable. And some of the other long speed, and you see it on tape, and the explosion as well in the vert is just out of this world. He is ridiculously athletic, and he's not getting that credit whatsoever. I don't see anybody talking about him from that perspective. But it's not just that. You know, he's got excellent footwork in his release. He can win early in many different ways. But he's, you know, the explosion and the change of direction, he really does utilize it in the release portion of the route. He can get pushed around a little bit when he gets jammed. But I see enough of him trying sort of some techniques and having some play strength that I do think there is a path to him being able to beat a jam, but it's gonna take some time. Like, it's gonna take a little bit of time to get that part of his game coming through. What I love is the way he attacks leverage, the way he separates with he doesn't separate with play strength, but he does separate with processing, technique, and athleticism, which is a rare combination in a guy. To have a guy where you're looking at him and thinking, this guy is really intelligent. He knows exactly how to attack defenders, but he's also got the speed and the explosion to defeat them, as well as that sort of technique down. So I have very little comments about his technical approach being deficient, because it isn't. It's so good. There can be a little bit of against those more physical corners who use their play strength wisely at the top of their routes, that they can stay stuck on him a little bit at the top of the routes. But I don't think that's necessarily something that would really cause concern for me. He has excellent technique on those vertical cuts, on those posts and corners. If you go back a year ago and see him play with Anthony Richardson, it's great tape. Like, every time Richardson's looking for a guy, and making connections on these big time throws that got him drafted early to the Colts, it's Pierce all on the end of them. His hands are technically excellent. He's going to catch everything in sight, including high degree of difficulty catches. He's got great hands on the run. He has ridiculous body control. He can contort himself into all kinds of different positions. He is not a proficient yak guy, is the one place where he's sort of missing. He wins mostly with speed, but he doesn't necessarily bring his change of direction chops to his yak. But it'd be interesting to see if that is something that he can build on, given that he has it. I really like his fit with the Ravens. I really do. And the thing with him is he almost becomes a re-roll on Bateman, I think is what he becomes. Like, he becomes a guy who you sort of say, okay, if they draft him, I think it is a comment probably on their belief in Bateman's ability to reach his ceiling and to reach his potential, because you sort of say, actually, this is the guy who's going to take over in a year and maybe he's going to beat him out in training camp this year. So I'm a big fan of Pearsall.
So if Pearsall's drafted, they don't have to make the decision on the fifth year option until after that. Do you think that reduces the chance they pick him up?
Okay. 100%.
I it wasn't as obvious to me that Pearsall is going to be an X at the NFL level. And I'll just start with that. But I trust your judgment on this. His testing is off the charts. Negative is he's 23 already. So he's one of the older receivers in the group, not the oldest, but one of the older ones. I think he'd be a very effective gadget player. I think he's a regularly in motion guy. I think that will help him get the releases that, you know, you want off the line of scrimmage. He did some shovel toss work. He'd be all kinds of good for misdirection and whatnot if you want to use him for that. I agree. It could be an underutilization of somebody if you really thought he could be an X. Pearsall, probably, I don't really see him with X characteristics in the same way you do. I guess I would say it's slot or Z. Overall numbers are outstanding. 11.1 yards per target, 2.23 yards per route run is good. He had 116.2 passer rating of balls thrown to him. Two drops is excellent. 9 missed tackles forced is actually a little disappointing. That number is right in the middle, and it could be good, it could be bad, and it's kind of circumstantial because he ran a lot of screen passes. 14 targets for 86 yards on screen passes. That wasn't particularly good. And the 9 missed tackles forced, he had opportunities for more. When you start off a screen pass often with a one-on-one opportunity against some defender on the outside. So there were opportunities for more misses than that. And he didn't really make that happen. He did some damage on extended plays that I liked. And I think you may be referencing that a little bit when you talk about him bailing Richardson out some in 22. I don't see him as a value in round 2, but if he was still around in round 3, I think it'd be an option. I mean, he's about 18th, 19th on my list. I've got 17 ranked. He's on my honorable mention list, and he's the second guy. So that's where I kind of had a little difference of opinion. But you know, honestly, you're making me like him a lot more with the love letter you just wrote him. And if the Ravens draft him, I'll be excited about it. I promise you.
There's definitely a difference. I would take him at 30 and be happy about it.
Whoa.
I don't I don't think there's a need to take him at 30. But from a talent perspective, I think he's a first round player. I think for me, he's a different archetype of X. He's not the traditional X, but I feel like there are X's that like one of my favorite receivers in the league is Chris Olave. And he is an X, and he's a different type of X in the way he plays the position. You know, he's in that sort of spectrum, Pearsall, for me. I think he's a great player, and someone's going to get an absolute steal and a discount on him in the draft, because he just doesn't seem to have the buzz that I think he deserves.
Okay, well, I mean, that's fair. And part of what I would ask you about is, would you be okay with the Ravens taking him at 30? Before you answer that question, giving the economics of that pick, because they can certainly flip 30 for 45 and more. And I think, with 90% certainty, maybe get Pearsall.
Yeah, I'm being a bit pedantic, really. Like, you wouldn't take him at 30. You would trade back and take him. But I absolutely think he's worth the 30th pick. The other problem with that is, I suppose the other issue is that there is a real chance that we haven't talked about this very much, but the Ravens have really backed themselves into a corner on offensive line. And so there's a real chance that a guy I like in a similar area is going to be available as an offensive lineman. And the need is just going to trump it entirely, especially as you could, if you really like Pearsall, you could sit and gamble that he gets to the bottom of the second round. You've got to play the draft a bit more intelligently than just picking the guys you like. We're not Seattle here.
The Raiders are known for this kind of uneconomical picks. Yeah,
exactly. So I'm being a bit sort of deliberately controversial by saying I'd pick him at 30. I think from a talent perspective, he's easily one of the best. He will be, once my grading's finished, he's easily one of the best 30 players in the draft. Significantly higher than that for me, I would say.
That is high praise indeed. And I appreciate hearing that from you. So my number six guy was Troy Franklin, and we already talked about him. So where are your number five guy?
So my number five guy is Brian Thomas Jr. So I've gone a little bit sort of back and forth on him, but I recently did a bit of cross checking and I think I was a little bit too low on him. So I've pushed him up, and there are a few things that I didn't see in some of the earlier, I found a bit more tape, all 22 tape on him. And so did some more work and I'm pretty happy with him now. I think very unlikely that the Ravens get a shot at him without a trade up. First of all, first thing to say,
even at 30, you don't think so?
Even at 30, I'd be surprised. I think the tools are too great, and he most definitely is an X at the next level. He's a work in progress. Like, there is project to him that you're going to have to do. I'd like to see, given his size, a bit more physicality and play strength throughout his game. But because of the size, because of the core strength that he has, I do think some of the technical deficiencies he has are very fixable. And obviously the speed and the athleticism at the size that he is pretty alluring. Where he does excel from a technical perspective is, you know, he can get into defenders' blind spots. He's good at attacking leverage. He can separate consistently with technique. You know, I do see outstanding technique on routes that call for a two-step break. So you are going to see him separate well with his technique on digs and slants and things like that, and out routes and deep outs. So you are going to see that. He sinks his weight really well, drops his hips to be able to do some of those more 90-degree routes. I really do like his technical ability that marries with the athleticism. He has a different gear, and the acceleration he shows on vertical routes is really special. He's got good body position, the way he catches the ball. I do think, again, I would like to see more sort of physicality in his play at the catch point, but I think that can probably come. And he can win with yak as well. You know, he's a pretty good yak getter, and so there's speed and change of direction there, and he's got a pretty good stiff arm, and he's going to run through some contact as well. That's one area where you kind of do see that where you can see that core strength that isn't necessarily applied as well, where it's more about technique. So I do think he's a starting X receiver. I also think he's scheme diverse, and I think he'd be a great pickup for the Ravens. If he drops to 30, that would be a real slam dunk, I think, given where I've got him graded.
I think it would be a great pick. There's so much to talk about Brian Thomas, because he's number four on my list. Didn't you know it's possible to get THC shipped right to your door? Mood delivers premium, 100% federally legal THC directly to you. I'm talking about delicious, high-potency gummies, top-shelf flower, home-baked cookies, vapes, anything you'd find at a dispensary, you can now order online and have it shipped quickly, discreetly, and conveniently right to your door. And every Mood product is made from pesticide-free cannabis grown on America's best small farms at prices that won't destroy your wallet. Best of all, not only is every Mood product backed by a 100-day satisfaction guarantee, but as I mentioned, listeners get 20% off their first order with code RAVENS. So head to mood.com/ravens, check out their online dispensary, and let Mood help you discover your perfect mood. And don't forget to use promo code RAVENS when you check out to save 20% on your first order.
At Kroger, an annual Boost membership just got even better. Now you can choose from Disney Plus with ads, Hulu with ads, or ESPN Plus on us when you sign up. Plus, enjoy unlimited free delivery, double fuel points, exclusive offers, and free items. Sign up for a Boost membership today. It's an easier way to save, including new streaming options to relax with while we deliver your groceries. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
At Planet Fitness, we're declaring it. This is the year of getting stronger, and you can get started now by saving when you join today. We have all the best-in-class equipment you could ever need, and you can work out your way on your time at any convenient location near you. Most open 24 hours. So let's do this. Join Planet Fitness today and save. Just $1 down, $15 a month. See Home Club for details.
So I love him. 6'3", 209, won't be 22 until October. The speed is all there at 4.33, had great jumps. So the complete package athletically. 13.5 yards per target this last year, 2.61 yards per route run. It's actually a little lower than I expected it to be, but it's still excellent. 148.8 passer rating throwing to him. 148.8, unreal. The vertical routes he ran this year, I suspect – is the single greatest year in college football history of vertical route running. And it may be that there have been a couple other guys close to this, but I'm going to give you the numbers here, and they're just outrageous. 19 targets on deep routes, 16 receptions. I mean, that's just that's otherworldly. And I know, you know, Daniels is a hell of a quarterback and likes to throw the ball in a particular way that I want to talk about also that makes it easy for him, but that's still unbelievable. And 13 touchdowns on 16 receptions. So his specialty, go find the football, go track the football in particular, and take it for six. It's just an unbelievable amount of vertical success. He matched that up with good hitch success, 35 targets for 246 yards. It's a lot of it was coming back underneath, and you need to have those two to sell, to make the sale at the top of the stem, as we talked about. We don't need to keep talking about it. Those two routes alone, now actually it's really four routes because you're talking about all of corner, post, and go, and the hitches made up 54 of his 87 targets. So there wasn't a whole lot of wasted effort throwing him screen passes or, you know, underneath crossing routes or things like that. This is what he does, is make his living on those two things. I have heard it often said about Daniels that there's not a lot of middle of the field throws that he liked going to the outside. Of course, when you're blessed with two vertical receivers like he had, it is normal to want to force the safety of particularly a single high safety into a choice. So it'd be the stupidest thing on earth to play single high, by the way, against this LSU team. And then expect your safety to be able to make the right choice, because, you know, Daniels is just going to look where he's going, maybe even look him off towards a particular player, throw the other way. Both of them were great at running under the football. And, you know, Daniels himself extends plays very well, obviously, to get the football out there after the leaving has occurred. It doesn't have to be thrown up like a Joe Walsh timed up ball. So it wasn't like that. Both these guys benefited tremendously. And I guess that is my only real concern about Thomas as a receiver, is without Daniels, but he will have Jackson, you know, if he's a Raven. So this is where we're grading him as. But without the vertical threat on the other side of the field, specifically making life extremely difficult for any sort of over-the-top coverage, will his time in the NFL not be as easy as it has been at LSU? I don't think it could possibly be as good. It will not be as easy, but will he be still effective at the NFL level? So that's the only real question I have. I absolutely love him as a player.
Yeah, I think the thing I would say about him is I think he's a year away, 1 to 2 years away from achieving his absolute ceiling as a player in the NFL. Just with the little things that he needs to work on, but those are little things, and I think you can pretty confidently bank on him being a really primary receiver in the NFL for a team somewhere.
All right, outstanding. So that it's your number five, it's my number four. So I guess we're on to your number four guy, and I don't remember if we've talked about him or not.
Have we done your number five guy?
My number five guy was Ladd McConkey.
Oh, okay, right.
Here
okay.
We have. Yeah.
So my number four guy is Keon Coleman.
Okay.
So yeah,
big
so
Keon difference Coleman. Of opinion on this one. I'm going to tell you right now. Okay.
So Keon Coleman. Yeah, is the guy I was talking about at the very beginning of the first episode, who is a guy I would not draft for the Ravens. So he's my number four guy. I love him, but I would not, under any circumstances, draft him for the Ravens. First of all, it's the point you made earlier about Andrews and Likely. He is a big slot at the next level. He is not an X. If you want to play him, you want to play him at X, you can play him at X, but it's going to waste him as a receiver. The reason you would potentially play him at X is because of the contested catch scenario that he has, and he's actually a better high degree of difficulty catch guy than he is a contested catch guy. So he's got a huge catch radius for me, but he does have a high volume of contested catches in his career at Florida State. But he's also not completed a number of his contested catches as well. He had a huge volume of contested catches. So he does show the ability to do it, but I don't think he's an X. I think he's a big slot, which gets you into confusion with what the Ravens will want to do with Andrews and Likely. The other issue with him is the way he separates. The way he's going to fit best is in a timing-based offense. And the issue for him from a fit perspective with the Ravens is, you know, all of the noise around the Kurt Warner criticisms of Lamar Jackson was some of it I think was unwarranted, but I do understand his criticism of Lamar and the Ravens offense of being on schedule. I personally don't believe that prohibits Lamar from being one of the best quarterbacks in the league. I don't think you have to be an on-schedule offense, especially when you can do what Lamar can do. But Keon Coleman is an on-schedule receiver, and so he wouldn't fit very well with the Ravens. So that's my big caveat. However, I do love his talent. I don't care about the speed. It's enough. He is a play speed guy. He plays a lot faster than he tests. I would say against press coverage, he's very good. He has a really good release package. I think he's a master of attacking leverage. Every single route he runs is technically excellent, but especially in short areas. So you're not going to get a guy that separates deep particularly, but he's going to run the short area routes and run them exceptionally well. And he's going to get open at the top of his breaks consistently. Now he's not going to stay open for a very long time because the acceleration out of the break isn't necessarily there. But if you put him in a timing-based offense, he's going to get hit time and time again at the top of his route because the separation is so consistent. As I said before, he's an excellent processor. He's going to get open against zone coverage routinely because he reads coverage at such a high level. At the catch point, for me, his skills are remarkably good. He's going to catch everything. He has great hand positioning on all types of catch. Like I said, he has missed some contested catches, but he's also shown a real ability to make contested catches as well. So it depends on how much weight you put in the ability to have success on that. As a yak threat, he can make people miss with change of direction. He's not a yak guy particularly, but he's not going to be a guy that just doesn't have any yak at all. So I do like that, but he's not going to run away from the most athletic DBs. I think his game translates really well to the NFL, to a big slot role. For me, he is one of the best receivers in this class.
Okay. So I'm on the other end of the spectrum, but I'm right with you there on the fit concerns. In both of them, the on schedule nature of trying to run a timed route is not just what Jackson wants to do. It's a, you know, he wants to extend plays, find a big play, make it with his legs. If not, he's not a guy who wants to take 8 yards right off the snap or right off the break to a receiver on a comeback route. Coleman, you know, obviously has speed concerns that I think honestly translated to his metrics and how he filled out. The biggest thing, and I'll just start with this, 7.6 yards per target is not not only impressive for a draftable receiver, it makes you not a draftable receiver in some ways. And that's ridiculous. Keon Coleman is obviously going to get drafted, but you know, my place I would draft him, you know, he becomes a project. I don't know that I can fix a project where speed is the primary deficiency. So if he was a bad route runner, I'd love that. If he were a guy who had some hands problem, I might be okay with it. Although if he was having trouble forcing missed tackles at his size, I'd say, yeah, maybe we can work with that and get him to be better. But you know, he's already got the speed concern, and the speed is paired up with separation concerns. In my case, I can't get by that. I can't get by, you know, basically when he's used on screens, he was not particularly good at 5.4 yards per target. Those are an extension of the run game again. And he wasn't providing value in that way to me. They ran a lot of screens at FSU, which accented some of that. The way you described him, the other thing is that lots of understanding of routes in the field and zone coverage and where he could, you know, where he might be able to sit down and whatnot, coming right out of his break, being open and whatnot. He really sounds like a tight end. You're already, you know, talking about using him as a big slot and being messed up. That I think he's kind of mismatched as being a wide receiver, a guy who plays on either boundary, honestly. And I think probably, you know, some team will draft him. They may end up using him primarily as a big slot guy, and you know, more of a Kelvin Benjamin would be the name that would, you know, come out of the past on him. I didn't have the love for him. I'd be okay if the Ravens got him in the third round. I don't even know how excited I'd be about it at that point, but that's probably a fair thing. He's number 15 on my overall list, and he's behind two other guys we had serious concerns about. One was Worthy, and the other is Devontae Walker.
Yeah. Okay. That makes sense. I think we just have a big difference in opinion on the player. I think the speed just isn't. I think he's so technically excellent at everything else that he does that the speed doesn't come into it. I think the way he keeps defenders guessing in the stem, it's a real challenge to cover him at the top of a route. And so the fit is absolutely imperative with him to reach his ceiling. He has to go to the right team that runs in that type of timing based offense. By the way, if he goes to Cincinnati, that's a problem. He fits perfectly with the Bengals, and he would fit perfectly across from a Jamar Chase and with a Joe Burrow at quarterback. Like, I'm terrified of him going to Cincinnati because I think he's going to terrorize the Ravens if he does. I just think he's I'm very, very high on Keon Coleman, just not for the Ravens. I would not be excited about the Ravens picking him for those reasons. But I do think he's a really good player.
All right. Now, he was your number 5 guy or 4 guy?
He was my number 4 guy.
Okay, and my number 4 guy was Brian Thomas. So we're now down to the top 3, where I would be shocked if we did not have the same player. The order in some ways doesn't matter because the Ravens aren't getting any of these guys. So a Ravens-centric show. But why don't you talk about your number 3 guy and why you like him?
Yeah, we may have a – so I'm it's becoming less controversial, but my number 1 is probably was controversial at the outset of the scouting process over this period, but anyway, we'll get to that in a second. My number 3 guy is Roma Dunze, who I absolutely adore as a receiver. I think he's exactly the type of receiver that I just love watching play. Like, if we take it out of the scouting realm, he's a dominant X who, you know, the amount of contested catches he made was absolutely ridiculous. You know, he was Penix's, I'm quite high on Penix, but he was Penix's best friend this year. Just elite at the catch point, really elite. And he's better, I think, at separating than a lot of people give him credit for. I think, again, what you're looking at is a situation where he was facing a lot of zone coverage, as Washington did. And people should go back and look up the, I can't remember the number, but it was ludicrous, the amount of zone coverage that, Washington faced. And it was because of the number of threats on the field, basically, that they faced all of that. But he's a special, he's a really special receiver. Like I said, he has ridiculous ball tracking, hands, body control. I think he's excellent in the release portion of the route. He's a true X in the way he's going to get off press with a jam. I think there are some things for him to work on there in terms of his technique, but he's definitely going to be able to do it. And he's advanced in terms of some of the techniques he uses. You don't see that very often in college, some of the things he uses, like the way he uses a wipe move to clear his hands. And he's got plenty of aggression and competitiveness in that portion of the route. He is technically very good in his in the way he separates. There are very few things for him to work on through the top of his routes and the way he breaks. So I think that's really, that's really great. I think there's not a lot to really not like about Romo Dunze. He's going to be a number one in the league, and he's definitely going in the top 10.
I would agree across the board. I'll have just a couple of comments about him. He already runs a little bit of everything in terms of routes, very polished in that particular area. He's got all the things in terms of catch radius, top speed, big body, multiple routes that you want in an X receiver. So he exactly makes his prototype. I did want to come back to you and talk about the number one receiver, the concept of a number one receiver. And I hear it thrown out there all the time. I get so tired of it, I got to tell you. But if you ask the typical person who wants to talk about that guy's not a number one receiver, and then you turn that around on him and you say, look, I tell you, I'm not trying to make fun of you here, but give me a list of all the number one receivers currently in the NFL. Do you think he comes back with a list of 8 or 12 or 14? But I'll bet you this, it's not one per team in terms of number one receivers.
Yeah.
So people have an expectation of a number one receiver that is really a number one asterisk receiver. That is just it's just way too high. So the notion that you can't get that, or that draftable players necessarily are going to always work out to be number one receivers in, if by the difficult definition, is something that I have a lot of problems with. I hate the term.
Maybe the better term is primary option. Like, I think he will be a primary option in an NFL offense. Like, I think he's, there's a spectrum of his like potential success in the league, and the high end is the very high end. Like, I've seen all kinds of comps for him, Davante Adams, Larry Fitzgerald, these type of comps. I think that's the very obviously high end of his spectrum. But I actually think the lower end of his spectrum is pretty high in terms of his ceiling. I think he's a guy that you would look at and say that is, and he will be, I think, a primary option in an NFL offense. He's going to be a first read type receiver.
You mentioned the contested catches, 21 out of 28 on contested catches. It's just freaking believable. A 75% catch rate for a wide receiver, period, is fantastic. You don't have that, but a 75% on contested catches is otherworldly. And Penix really used him as a bailout guy. And like, Penix really deserved to even have a bailout guy when he had three receivers like that. Come on, make a choice, make a good throw once in a while. But no, he did drive a lot of help from Rome in particular. One thing there was is that there were 6 interceptions on balls thrown his way. I did not go back to try and find each of those interceptions. And this goes into the same category as drops, of really trying to figure out, was any of that Adunze's fault, or was it things that Penix had thrown into a tight window trying to get his bailout guy to bail him out? But anyway, I did not get it. Did you get a sense of that?
The one thing it's probably too rooted in my, it's not rooted in any data or anything specific, but the feel I got was that I can remember a couple of times when he threw into far too tight a window and just asked too much of Adunze. Like, I don't blame the guy. Like, you see him come down with the most ridiculous contested catches. So you sort of give Penix a bit of a pass on that front, but it felt like more sort of, okay, just pick and choose sometimes. instead of just throwing, always throwing up to this guy. He's special. And he also, I didn't realize until recently, played through a broken rib for a large portion of the season. He punctured his lung in a game and just carried on playing. He didn't miss a game. So he's awesome.
All right. I wouldn't have had any problem if he was the guy who was your surprise number one, by the way.
No, but, me either.
But he's also my number three. So let's move on to your number two.
Yeah. So my number two is Marvin Harrison Jr. The big caveat here is that I think Marvin Harrison Jr. could in, and let's be ridiculous. This is a little bit of a ridiculous statement, but the ridiculousness of the statement is because of how ridiculously good I think Malik Nabers is. I think there is in time a potential for Harrison to be better than Nabers. I think he has a slightly higher ceiling, and that's reflected in my performance and potential grades, in that Harrison's potential grade is higher than Nabers, but Nabers' performance grade is higher than
the actual numbers in the case of those two receivers for both of them.
Yeah. So this is the first time I've done the grading. So I've worked out that five is elite. A score of five is elite. So Harrison Jr.'s performance grade is five flat. Nabers' performance grade is 508. I don't have anywhere, largely because of how ridiculous he is, I don't have anywhere that Nabers can go from the 508. I don't see anywhere where he has headroom to improve. But Harrison Jr.'s potential score is 525. So he really could still have space to go. And that's why, he's still a ridiculously good option for whoever gets their hands on him. I think there's just a few, the reason why he has some headroom, I think there's just a few things. He's inconsistent sometimes with the way he attacks targets. And I think that might hurt him a little bit with his hands when he gets to the league. That's the kind of, few things that you could say, it's really difficult though to find things that where he is inconsistent, because he's so utterly brilliant. There are some things, I'm not going to talk too much about him because he's been so written about and talked about, but some of the things that I think are exceptional are how explosive he is in and out of his breaks. It's scary. He's an incredibly difficult cover in those situations. Some of his body control is absolutely elite. The way he gets feet down and bounds in the most ludicrous of circumstances, both on just on the sideline on normal routes, but also in high stakes in the red zone and in the end zone. There's a bunch of different things with him that is where he is exceptional. He's going to be a phenomenal receiver in the NFL for a long time.
Now,
I liked the Ringers comparison. I don't love player comparisons or the player comps and stuff, but the Ringer does these really funny comparisons of players, and usually to pop culture thing references. But Marvin Harrison's player comp was if Marvin Harrison Sr. had a slightly taller son, which I think is great as a comp for him.
All right. So, there are everything to like about him pretty much in terms of being a very polished receiver. I love the polished receivers and polished players, pass rushers. This is true in this draft some as well, with the Murphys, for example. Who's the other guy his dad's name is not the same as his. So it's Ellis, I think it is the guy who comes from an enormous defensive family with, I think, father and three brothers who were players. But anyway, Harrison, I like it when you come from a lifer family and you have the polish from that. I think that's can only be positive. The Mannings, obviously it worked out for any number of other multi-generational families in many different sports, but I think it'll work out for Harrison there. And I think it gives you, the bloodlines give you a lot of surety about how good an NFL player he's likely to be. His statistics in 2023 honestly were a tick below some of the other great receivers in the game. 10.6 yards per target's a little low. 3.44 yards per route run was excellent. And the 120.3 passer rating was not at the top of the class by any stretch. There are a number of guys higher than that. But he essentially duplicated a ridiculously good 2022 season when there were questions about all of the other receivers that he played with. And I think a lot of those went away in 23. So that was positive. Not a missed tackle force guy, but he still was, you know, a decent 6.4 yak per reception, given his size and whatnot. I think his contested catch rate is just okay. I think that's part of what was going on at Ohio State. Possibly, you know, some of the timing was not right on there. Whatever I might have bad to say about Marvin Harrison or any kind of mitigating factor, there's two things about it. One is it doesn't matter because it's pure fantasy to think the Ravens get him. And two is it's just going to make the difference between he's, you know, whether he's drafted fourth or sixth, probably in the whole draft, or third or sixth in the whole draft. But I probably Marvin Harrison or Malik Nabers, whichever one is desired, will go at number four.
Yeah, I completely agree. Was he your number one?
He was my number one. And it wasn't that, by the way, I went back and forth a lot on that. So go ahead and talk about Nabers and we'll go through him.
Nabers for me, you know, has all pro potential immediately as soon as he enters the league. You know, he has plenty of athleticism, outstanding athleticism, but everything he does is technically excellent. You know, I can't tell you how impressive he is in the release portion of the route. Like, it's rare to find someone with the extent of technically excellent moves he has to get off press and press with a jam. But it's even rarer to find someone who has a sophisticated plan for how they get off press and how they deploy those techniques down in, down out with different defensive backs. And he has that. It's something you just don't. You don't see very often in college players. It's, you know, when you obviously as somebody who tries to do player analysis, you try and watch some of the best receivers in the league at doing that. And he absolutely is at that level already in terms of the way he releases. And that's watching him against some elite competition at defensive back in college. You know, you got to see him go against Terrion Arnold, who I rate very highly as a corner. So I really do expect him to thrive immediately in the release portion. His technique as a separator, you know, I mentioned before on a guy I can't remember which guy it was, but that it's rare to have that. Oh, I think it was Pearsall. It's rare to have that triumvirate of athleticism, processing, and technique. Nabers is on just a different level entirely in terms of the way he separates. He can separate in so many different ways. He understands exactly how to attack leverage, how to bait defensive backs. He's just special. You're not going to find much to pick in his hands. All of that is incredibly refined. He deploys his speed and explosion in his yards after catch. You can see him run away from guys. There really is very little to not like about Nabers as an immediate contributor. The only thing, like I said, is I'm not sure there's any headroom because he's so good already that I think he's going to step in day one and be amongst, you know, some of the top receivers in the game. I really like Nabers a lot, obviously.
Okay, so I'll try and not duplicate a lot of the things you've said here because they're terrific, but from a pure metrics point of view, had a better year than Harrison. 12.3 yards per target, 3.64 yards per route run is unreal, and 141 passer rating throwing to him. So he's about 20 points higher, I think, than Harrison from that perspective. Here's the big one, though, and this really got me. 30 missed tackles forced. Now, he's not a huge guy at 6 feet 200, so he's really a guy who does it with speed, with elusiveness, with leverage reading. I think particularly I thought his leverage reading was better after the catch than it was at the top of the stem, which is very unusual. Is normally a receiver is so focused and so practiced in terms of what he does at the top of the stem that you won't have the same ability to beat people with a false step or with a 1-2 move after the catch. But he was absolutely terrific at that. He's reminiscent of Keaton Mitchell's rookie year, combining speed, more contact balance than you would ever expect from the player. I mean, Keaton Mitchell's a small guy, ran right through contact a lot of times. And Neighbors is a not huge receiver who runs through some of that contact. So I really like that about him. I think he did benefit tremendously from who Daniels was, the combination of hitch and vertical. He was 10 of 19 for 267 on his – that's not his vertical routes. That must be his hitch routes, because it doesn't make any sense for that to be his vertical routes. But that was his hitch production. And, you know, he knew how to try and manipulate the receiver there. I do feel like when he's at the top of the stem, he was more playing his own cards. And he's a very sudden athlete, so he could just throw a move out there but not wait for the misstep to then plant and go the way some other receivers can. A Ladd McConkey might be in that group, or some other guys in this class who really lead leverage. Welker and Edelman are guys who often are even overcredited for that in terms of what they could do with the Patriots, but they're guys. Don't know that I really have anything else to say other than, you know, is it possible that both of these receivers playing on the opposite side, who we both loved at a very high level, Brian Thomas and Malik Neighbors, that they're just not going to be in as good a situation at the NFL level. And also with a quarterback who can hold the football forever.
Yes.
How much of a step back? Yeah.
There is a chance. I think the chance is higher with Brian Thomas Jr. I think Neighbors, even with a poor quarterback situation, I think he's still going to be, you know, a top 10, 15 producer in terms of yardage in the league. I think he's just that special. I think he makes a quarterback better. Yeah, obviously it'd be better if he ended up in a situation where he has a quarterback, but that, you know, there's two chances in there. There's a chance. I mean, he's not going to end up with the Chargers because they're going to trade back and take an offensive lineman, but you know, there's a chance he ends up with Justin Herbert. There's an equal chance he ends up with Daniel Jones, and you're definitely going to see a difference there because of the quarterback play. But I think it's going to be immediately obvious how, you know, I mentioned before that I love Chris Olave, and they're very different players actually, but Olave, obviously, I think has you know, is miscast in New Orleans with those quarterbacks that he's had, and you don't see him reach the ceiling that he potentially could have if he had a good quarterback with him. So yeah, there would definitely be a drop off. But with Neighbors, I just feel so confident in his abilities that he's going to make any QB he gets paired with better. And maybe he helps Daniel Jones to play himself out into another ridiculously lucrative contract for Daniel Jones.
All right, my friend. Well, this has been 2.5 hours extremely well spent. I can't believe your daughter has not woken up yet during this. That's really a break for us. Folks out there, I'm sure you can hear just what kind of level of review you're getting from James on this, and would be really interested in hearing about his draft guide.
Yeah, so my draft guide, which I released 2 years ago, I did not release last year because of my aforementioned daughter coming along last year. So I've been able to get back on it this year. I have a more sophisticated grading system this year that means there are less reports, but there's still going to be 70 to 75 detailed reports, full page reports on guys in this draft across all of the different positions. They're the top guys. I don't necessarily go that deep, but you will get a really good view of the top guys, and also probably get you mostly equipped for day one and day two. And the main way it will get you equipped is from a Ravens perspective, because all of the reports have a section about a projection and their fit with the Ravens, which I sort of write at the end of my evaluation of the player. And so that guide should be coming out, I'm hoping mid-April, probably just a couple of weeks before the draft. And you can check out some of the reports that release early, individual reports on players that release early on Russell Street Report now. But the full guide with the grading and everything will be coming mid-April.
All right. He's at NFL Ogden on Twitter. Make sure you give him a follow. He's a great one. James, I really appreciate you being on the show. I look forward to you hopefully being on air for some of the draft with us. definitely you're one of the people I really respect in terms of draft work. And I'd love to see if you can join us for an hour, 2 hours, 3 hours. Hopefully, I know you'll be traveling at that time. It might be a challenge, but we'll hope we can have you on for some of that. Other folks out there, we hope you'll listen to our draft coverage. We'll be on for all 3 days. The plan is to be on with a rotating panel, but think of this as a loose group of friends that you can watch the draft with, that hopefully there's some valued analysis. There's some organic experience we're sharing in this. And we'll be trying to bring people on to ask questions directly out of the room. So we'll have a hand raise system for that and hopefully be able to get people on via link to participate in the question and discussion thing. And very much want an open mic for that component of the show. We'll have good panelists for you, as we always do, and hope you'll join us for that. James, thanks again for coming on.
Absolute pleasure, Ken. Thank you.
And we'll talk to you next time on Film Study.
Kroger, an annual Boost membership just got even better. Now you can choose from Disney Plus with ads, Hulu with ads, or ESPN Plus on us when you sign up. Plus, enjoy unlimited free delivery, double fuel points, exclusive offers, and free items. Sign up for a Boost membership today. It's an easier way to save, including new streaming options to relax with while we deliver your groceries. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Restrictions apply. See site for details.